Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Argent, Hold Your Head Up, from their third album, All Together Now, in 1971 that was released. And they also released it as a single in 1972, and it reached number 5 in the USA and UK charts and sold over 1 million copies.
I bought it.
Did you really?
Of course I did. It was one of my favourite tracks. It's like, this is where I got the love of the Hammond organ from.
Right.
Well, the Hammond organ like this, of course, John Lord really gave me the Hammond organ thing from Deep Purple, because he has the, you know, through those big Marshalls, and he was a mother thunker, you know, real big rock and roll sort of organ. But this is a lot more sort of traditional. It's almost jazzy in a way, you know. And what did Rick Wakeman say about this? Did he say it was...
It's one of the greatest Hammond organ solos ever.
Yeah, well, they are. Which, of course, on the singles, cut out. So, but we've put the full thing in, as we always do, because we love Hammond organ. And we love extended tracks.
Indeed.
The way that they were originally meant to be. And Russ Ballard did not write this, which is unusual, because he seems to have written all the big hits. It was written by Rod Argent and...
Chris White.
The producer, yeah, because Chris White and Rod Argent produced it.
Yeah.
Which is quite remarkable, because Russ Ballard, of course, is probably luxuriating in his huge mansion somewhere in the Caribbean, because he's written more hit songs than you can shake a stick at. Did you know that he wrote You'll Win Again for Hot Chocolate?
No, I didn't know that. Now, that's cool. That's a cool one. You can have that. You're turning the tables on me now. I can see you now, Campbell.
Yeah, I knew that.
I'm watching you. Okay, did you know that he wrote a hit single for Rainbow?
Yeah, since you've been gone.
Bananas. I had that as my secret text. I had it on a separate note in code so you wouldn't see it.
Well, I love
Stop
Rainbow.
It now.
I absolutely love Rainbow.
What a great song.
And of course,
song.
We've got him on later on in the show.
Yeah. It did take me a little while to try and get my head around this whole band thing, because obviously Rod Argent was in the Zombies, and then he formed Argent when they first broke up. So Jim Rodford was on bass, and that was Argent's cousin originally.
The late,
as well.
Great, because he's died pretty recently, didn't he?
Yeah. So it was, and they basically all got together, and in 1974 Ballard left and was replaced by John Verity, on guitarist. Mm. They stopped touring late 76. Bob Henrit, who's the drummer, and Ballard went on to join the Kinks. Mm. Do you know, it's family, and that's the thing, isn't it? It's a community. So I'm getting used to the fact now that people sort of do a band, see if the chemistry works for a while, and then move on.
Well, let's just talk about Russ Ballard again in terms of his guitar playing, because I love that riff. Ba-da-da. It is a beautiful riff, and I love the way in the middle. I love his sound. He's very understated. His timing's great. It's very, very laid back. But I love that passage in the in the centre there, where it's sort of, he's playing basically the same chords, so he's like pedaling over the different chords of the keyboard, and it sounds really, really cool. He has to change it eventually, because of course the chords change. But but the first a few strikes with his fuzz guitar. More fuzz, I'm afraid, there.
Hold your head up.
Yeah, right, exactly. Fantastic. But, you know, it's a great tune, and a bit of an anthem, really, in the 70s, you know?
Yeah. No, I really like that, actually. And on first listen, it grabs you. There's lots of space. It's not... It seems to have stood the test of time, isn't it, really?
Oh, definitely, yeah. And space is the word. Mm. Because even after it all finishes, before the big guitar comes in, which isn't actually all that big, it's just strident. And, you know, now it'd be compressed to hell. It'd be completely overproduced. And you come bang, 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 and it'd be like massive and rah, you know. But here, it's quite subtle, you know. But all that messing around with the strings and then it's going... That's great before it comes in, you know. Love it.
It struck me as well, you know, in terms of, we've just come back from playing at Linton Festival, the Starlight Campbell Band. And the one thing that I've noticed as well is sometimes there can be that intensity with music. And what I really enjoy is when musicians give you space.
Yeah.
It's not all about titillation. It's not all about, let's see how high we can wind your emotions up. It's a journey.
That's right. And I think it's the dynamics, the dynamic range of a performance. And that's what we always try to do, you know. Mm. And, you know, and there's one other thing about the Hammond, coming back to Linton.
Yeah.
Because Johnny Henderson, who plays with us, is a fabulous, Hammond player. And he is a Hammond player. That's what he does. He brings his own Hammond B3 cut down and is Leslie. I think it's a 147 he's got. and it just sounds fantastic. Now, many people tell me, many people, that, you know, emulations, they're great and they sound just as good. And Nords, they sound fantastic, just as good. But tell you what, they're wrong. Because when you're playing on the stage with a Leslie, the power, the sheer depth of thing that goes on with that whirling Leslie. And if you're close enough to it, you can actually get your hair dried by the rotating horn on the top. If nobody knows about Leslies and stuff, you look them up. But it's like an old school technology. Nothing electronic about it. The speakers actually rotate, or the horn anyway, rotates at the top. The speaker's fixed. And underneath is like this cylinder which rotates around. It's a very bizarre looking thing. All mechanical with lots of levers and elastic bands almost powering. It's fantastic.
It is fantastic. What I loved is that Donny doesn't have a DI, which means basically that there are old school mics placed around that to pick up the dynamics of the sound, like I do on my bass cab as well.
Yeah, so, but he can't DI that. But unfortunately, he had to use his Nord the other day because his Wurlitzer was slightly out of tune, he said. And even putting his Nord, he puts it through an amp, a proper amp and cab, and that's it, you know. So it's all cool. You know, great. We love B3s. We love Argent. We love Argent. We love Russ Ballard and the late, great Jim Rodford and Bob Henry, of course. Thank you. Frankenstein from the album They Only Come Out at Night by the Edgar Winter Group, 1972.
Where's Mr. Zappa hiding?
Probably under a big pile of yellow snow or something. I don't know, but it's mighty. Because that was an instrumental. I mean, and to top, what did it do? It topped a load of charts, didn't it? And all that sort of carry on.
It topped the Billboard charts in May 1973 and also the RPM 100 charts in Canada. It reached number 18 in the UK and 10 in Mexico.
Well, it's a great song. And what I love about that is that magnificent use of the ARP 2600 synthesizer. It was like a modular thing. I think it was ARP's response to the Moog, or Moog, I should say.
Yeah.
And there's somebody on the island that's got one of those on the Isle of Man. Yeah, so it's all hanging around up there, and I've actually messed around with it. And they're a fearful thing. I mean, they're monsters, you know. They're not like they are now, and all analogue, but great sound, you know. And all those sounds basically came from that. And I think that Edgar Winter was one of the first people to have a keyboard round his neck. He was, I think he's... was he on the Old Grey Whistle Test? I remember him on the Old Grey Whistle Test.
Greetings, yeah. Pop pickers.
Yeah. Oh, magnificent. And, of course, his brother... Johnny Winter, the guitar player, who died, of course, recently.
Yeah.
But they look very similar, of course, because they've both got this very white hair but very, very cool guys.
It is. They are. I can't speak, because what got me in the middle was the conversation of that synth, and it felt like it was the Smash advert. And I just wanted to go, and then they smashed them, you know, and it just had, and then there was like this space language going on between aliens. You could hear this, and then that double drum solo came in, and it was like a call and response thing. They were talking to each other.
Yeah, and the drum solos, I'm not particularly keen on the solo. I don't think they're, well, from my point of view, they're not really great solos, but I think they're appropriate for the song.
Yeah.
And, of course, the drummer, of course, Bob Ruff, is it?
Yeah.
He went to join, after this, Montrose with Sammy Hagar.
Ah.
Because Ronnie Montrose was the guitar player on here. And a bit of a useful tip, or unusual tip.
What's that?
Montrose was supporting Status Quo when I went to see them in the King's Hall in Manchester years and years ago. And he had a theremin, and I remember seeing him, and I thought, wow, what's that, you know? It's fantastic. And Montrose were really great. Ronnie Montrose, great guitar player, really good. Sammy Hagar, of course, went on to Van Halen. I mean, you know, it progressed on from there. But what a fantastic song that is.
And it was called Frankenstein, which surprised me, because it was actually spliced together from various different takes, which you wouldn't, I suppose, when you've got like that artificial sound of the synth, it's not as noticeable in a way, because it's inhuman in a way, isn't it?
Well, yeah. Reading all these books that we've got in the house, Langlois and Glyn Johns, Phil Brown, Jeff Emmerich, this splicing thing of different takes is actually a lot more common than what you might think.
Ah.
And, you know, it was done an awful lot. Of course, now in Pro Tools, it's very easy. You just, you know, click and drag and all that sort of thing. Then you had to apply a razor blade with Mother's Little Helper sometimes.
And it was a measure three times, cut once kind of thing.
Well, because from a lot of the books I've read, it's not necessarily the case, because
really?
Most of them were out of it on illicit substances.
And do you know what Edgar Winter's middle name is?
No.
Holland.
she always didn't get her own way.
Miss Judy's Farm by The Faces, which was their third album from A Nod Is As Good As A Wink to A Blind Horse. And it was actually the second release in 1971 on Warner Brothers. They were pretty prolific then in that year.
Amazing. You know, but that track's only about one thing. One thing.
Miss Judy.
No, it's about Ronnie Wood's amazing rhythm playing. My God. What an incredible player. When it comes to that breakdown in the middle, and it starts, and tempos go out the window because they start speeding up towards the song, the end of the song. And what I love is just before that breakdown, it goes into like a swing. Yeah. It swings, the drums swing up. And if you listen to the beginning as well, the bass, it's got some swing to it. It's not straight in force. It's fantastic. But Ronnie Wood, I think that's one of the greatest pieces of rhythm guitar ever recorded. And that's it. And that's including all the you know, Rolling Stones and all this lot. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I raise you, Ronnie Lane on bass. I counter-argument you there, because that bass, its spirit animal, reminds me of a cross between a hippopotamus and a brontosaurus.
It does.
It's incredible that it's quite mesmerising. I was just thinking, what is he doing? It's just, the bass for me is just beautiful, beautiful.
Well the breakdown, I say it's that break, when it comes to that breakdown, the interaction between the bass and the guitar is great, isn't it? It really is great.
And that was co-produced by Glyn Johns as well, which is fantastic because you can hear the space in it.
Well, you can. And later on, of course, the Faces, or Rod Stewart in actual fact, produced his own stuff using the techniques, obviously, of Glyn Johns, because, you know, Every Pitch Tells a Story, which is one of our favourite albums, which is later Rod Stewart album, but basically with the same personnel, you know, that it sounds very, very similar, you know, except I think on this, they weren't as drunk. They don't sound quite as drunk on this one, definitely not.
Well, I think it's probably, I think Glyn Johns kept kind of cutting out the crap maybe and keeping them in order because he didn't like that kind of behaviour, did he really?
We stopped working there at Clapton because of it, didn't we? All that sort of stuff, yeah.
But you know, did you know that before Ronnie Wood and Rod Stewart first joined Faces, that they first collaborated under the name of a band called Quiet Melon.
Blimey.
And they recorded a few songs and played some shows because they were playing with the Jeff Beck group at the time, and then they left, and that's when they formed the Faces. What's quite interesting as well is that record company execs wanted them to carry on using the name the Small Faces. They were saying, well, no, you know, it's a different band, because they were trying to keep that connection with the public. But, you know, they
It was all about Steve Marriott, I mean, the Small Faces, really. Yeah. And then when he went on to form Humble Pie, you know, it sort of... And it wasn't, because it was really Rod Stewart's Faces, because he really put that vocal thing in it.
It's true. It was recorded at Olympic as well, our favourite studio.
Well, of course.
Of course. D'accord.
And I have some plans of Olympic. And I've got the whole, I love that studio, the whole Helios console, that was what was used on this. I mean, it's remarkable. But Ronnie Lane, he wasn't happy, was he? Because he that's why he left eventually, because he wanted more vocal duties.
Yeah, I think also with Rod Stewart, he'd had that solo career with Maggie May. It was starting to take off, and really, and they were kind of overshadowed by Rod's solo career, and the fact that he didn't get enough chance to do lead vocals, and he had a lot to say. So I think he was just frustrated. That's what some of the documentarians have said, anyway.
Well, Rod Stewart though is such an awesome vocalist, and you don't realise how awesome he is until you try and sing some of the tunes, because it doesn't sound very high.
No, that's weird. You're
but
right.
His pitch is really high. Yeah. You know, and he's actually got a very high voice, but it's got all that gravel in it, you know. But it's remarkable. But what I love about that though is it's obviously recorded all together. There's speeding up, no click tracks, and it was a great band, The Faces. I just love that band. And one of the greatest compliments we had at Linton Festival is somebody came up to us and said afterwards, he said, "Wow, that really reminds me of The Faces in the early 70s. Well, I nearly cried, because if that's the case, my goodness me, you know. Because it's basically the same thing. Well, it's a Hammond guitar, you know, vocals. And
that's a huge compliment.
I couldn't believe it. And I did. I nearly burst into tears, because I love these early recordings, you know. And they sound so good and rich and full and fat. Wow.
Listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
And that was I Can't Get No Satisfaction by Devo. Now, Devo, I think that's the best cover of that song. I like the original, of course, everybody likes the original, but that is probably one of the best cover versions of a song I've ever heard.
It's fantastic.
Deconstructed it. All the different time signatures, the guitars are coming in all over the place. I love the in the middle. I'm on loser. It's just awesome. Greatly produced. And David Bowie and Iggy Pop both loved this band, didn't they?
They did, yeah. They were trying to get them signed. I had a look into them, you know, because they are a bit... You know, when you hear that track, you just go, who are these people? Like, and what the hell is going on? That was what was in my head. I thought, hang on a minute. I've got Frank Zappa here. And then we had the Edgar Winter group. And then Devo Right. So my head is now being stretched in ways that it's not used to thinking.
All even we need now is focus, and that
you can bugger off. Because that was a complete head fright. I don't think I've ever recovered since from that.
Hocus Pocus. Anna.
Yeah, when you played that Hocus Pocus, I had no idea what to make of it. So anyway, going to Devo. This is what I've heard about them, okay?
Okay.
Just so let's look at context. They're an American rock band from Akron, Ohio. Yeah. Mm. So starting at the beginning, their name Devo comes from the concept of de-evolution. That's the idea that instead of continuing to evolve as a species, mankind has actually begun to regress.
Well, I agree with that.
Okay, so the idea was started as a joke, actually, by Kent State University art students Gerald Casale and Bob Lewis. And they created a number of these satirical pieces based around de-evolution. Then they bumped into this guy called Mark Mothersbaugh, who was a keyboard player. And he brought a more humorous side to the band, so much so he was playing in a band called Flossy Bobbit at the time.
What else?
Exactly, what else? So, of course, the joke became more serious after they had the Kent State shootings in May 1970. Mm.
Shocking.
And so what happened then was in 1976, they shot a short music video, The Truth About De-Evolution, which was directed by Chuck Statler. Now, that won a prize at the Ann Arbor Film Festival, which then attracted the attention of David Bowie, because Bowie was into film. And he really liked them. And, of course, Iggy and Bowie were friends. So he got them a deal. So they encouraged them to get a deal with Warner in 1978. But Bowie had to back out of the deal through other business commitments. And then they ended up being produced by Mr. Brian Eno.
But you can tell. You can tell it's Eno. Eno's work. I mean, he's a genius, Eno. And you could imagine him fitting perfectly into that Eno sort of thing.
Yeah. That experiment, because Brian just, he allows you, doesn't he, to just evolve and experiment.
Yeah. Well, what I love off this album as well, the Devo album, is Space Junk, which is a fantastic song. We'll have to play it in one of the future shows. And it's actually very true, you know, we're going to get hit by Space Junk, and the Space Junk falling out of the sky right now, and this is like in the late 70s. Fantastic.
Do you know what I really like about them as well? Is that there's a different way of commenting on the world. Like with Zappa, he had a humorous take on it. So instead of taking it on a serious note, which I know Neil Young does sometimes, he comments quite hard and kicks you in the shins and up the butt and everywhere else. But with Devo and with Zappa, they're sort of they're putting that humorous angle.
Well, I think they're influenced by Zappa because, you know, all those, the strange, well, not the unusual times, it's not particularly strange, but unusual. And the way the instrumentation's presented and the sound, you know, I think it's obviously very Zappa-oriented.
And the power of television at the time as well. They appeared on the Saturday Night Live show, and that's when they took off. Well, so in those days, of course, one appearance on that and you're off. Boof!
Well, the video's fantastic. Anyway.
Devo.
Devo.
De-evolution.
Just a perfect day. Drink sangria in the park. And then later, when it gets dark, we go home. Just a perfect day. Feed animals in the zoo. Then later, a movie too, and then home. Oh, it's such a perfect day. A perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on. Just a perfect day. Problems all left alone. Weekenders on our own. It's such fun. Just a perfect day. You made me forget myself. I thought I was someone else, someone good. Oh, it's such a perfect day. I'm glad I spent it with you. Oh, such a perfect day. You just keep me hanging on. You just keep me hanging on. You're going to read just what you saw. Just what you sow. You're going to reap just what you sow.
Lou Reed, Perfect Day. Wow.
My father's favourite track, and I'm going to dedicate this to the late, great Joseph Campbell. And I remember him. I know it's a bit soppy, this, I suppose, but I can do because it's our show.
Yeah.
I remember him when computers were in their infancy, and he was listening to this track and looking at pictures of his grandson, both of them, in tears. And that, it got me in such a way, and I thought, my goodness me, music, it's such a powerful thing, association, and, you know, what a great track that is, and he loved it. So, yeah, well, there you are.
Beautiful story, beautiful.
And produced this song by the lovely David Bowie and Mick Ronson, two of our favourite people of all time. Of course, David Bowie was never there, and he didn't do very much production. I think he just wafted in
left
and wafted
it to
out
Mr. Hull, didn't he? And he said purple did a bit or something.
Yeah. You've got to watch the documentary. You've got to watch, besides Bowie, which is actually quite a sad documentary, but there are bits in it that are very, very funny.
Yeah.
With Mick Ronson, you know. But he played piano on this and did all the string arrangements on the album. And
he
when
did.
He's, you know, looning around in his platforms in his silver suit with the Spiders from Mars, you would never think it. But he was a fantastic musician, was Mick Ronson.
It is funny, isn't it? That sort of sensitive, like you just said about your dad, and like the sensitive side of men. And it never ceases to amaze me, actually, how men can be so kind of strong and like forthright, and yet there's an underbelly of softness that not everyone gets to see a lot of the time. Which, and all credit to Mick for that. It was recorded at Trident as well, by the way, I wanted to tell you, because I know.
That's right, one of the very early Trident consoles. But Herbie Flowers is on that album, and Herbie Flowers, who did, of course, Walk on the Wild Side, and he put the double bass on and the electric bass just to get double session fees.
True.
That's why it sounded like that. But on this, Klaus Voormann was on bass.
Exactly.
Who played
now,
with,
who is Klaus Voormann?
Well, he played with George Harrison. He's very famous because he's like associated with the Beatles a lot. And he's done an awful lot of stuff over the years. And, of course, David Bowie did backing vocals on it. And what I like about this is that Trevor Boulder, of course, who was the bass player in The Spiders from Mars, played trumpet on this. Incredible. Or on the album, anyway. And
guess what Herbie Flowers played, though, because he wasn't playing bass.
Go on.
The tuba.
Was he playing tuba on
exactly
this? So he got more session fees.
Exactly. Well, it's weird, though, because I played French horn at school, and it's just an interesting how you've got, like, sort of bass players playing brass instruments as well.
But really, you need to meet are the backing singers known as the Thunder Thighs. Which made me laugh an awful lot. Oh, dear. Karen Friedman, Darry... Lalou and Casey Sange, and they were known as the Thunder Thighs, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic, isn't it? But what a great song. And, I mean, that album, Transformer, I remember my friend Howard Fisher, Hercule, he played it to me, and I didn't like it. I said, yeah, it's a lot of rubbish, all this. And I didn't realise what greatness I was listening to. So I'm sorry, Hercule, you were absolutely right. It is a marvellous album, great production, fantastic songwriting, and emotion all the way through it.
Blinking Wonderful, Gary Numan and Cars. That's his debut single from his debut studio album, The Pleasure Principle, which he released on the 24th of August in 1979. And it went to number one in the UK and it number nine in America. That's cool.
I love Gary Numan.
So do I.
We watched that documentary recently.
Android in La La Land.
Remarkable, because it shows him now and the struggle he's had, and he talks about the music business. He's a very, very sharp guy, but also we saw the old Grey Whistle Test pretty recently, didn't we? The one that was re-released,
yeah.
The new one. And I thought, personally, he was the only act that was any good on it, actually. You know, yeah. Like the new acts, essentially,
yeah, yeah.
Or the people that were, you know.
I know where you're coming from on that, too.
It, What I didn't particularly like about it, in the fact he's using a lot more guitars than less synths, because the great thing about Gary Numan for me, it was like a rock and roll band with synthesizers, because he had a real bass player, he had a real drummer on it, right? And then it was like a four-piece, so there was a synth player, there was him playing and singing. And it really worked, and it's very, very powerful. And on that documentary, he talks about how the first time he found a Moog synth, didn't he? Because he'd just done... What he'd done? He'd done an album or something, hadn't he?
His first band was Tube Boy Army, wasn't it?
That's right,
so he'd released a couple of albums and some singles of that, and Our Friends Electric. So that was his band, and he was signed to Beggar's Banquet. I can't remember the detail now.
But what he did, I think, because it's always his band, and he just dropped the name Tube Boy Army.
Yeah.
This was his first thing he did in his own name. But prior to that, I think he did some demos, and they were all electric guitar based. It was like a punk band.
Yeah,
and then he went into the studio, you remember?
Yeah.
And he saw the Moog synth, and he pressed the note, and it went, whoa, and he said, I've got to have one of these. And he threw all his old tracks out the window and started again. So the people who they signed, Beggar's Banquet signed, didn't end up doing what they should have been doing because they did a different thing, which is great.
But they got him and he got the real him. And I love the fact he's struggled, but you've got to struggle with your art, and he's in it, isn't he? He's in it fully. In fact, he gets too in it sometimes, and he has to be sort of coerced away just so he can actually get some light and some life. Because otherwise he'd be in the studio all the time, from what you can gather on the documentary. But lovely, lovely, lovely guy.
Yeah, lovely guy, and great sound.
Probably
one of the greatest exponents of the British exponents of the synthesizer, you know, in that thing. Great lyrics, you know, great track.
It's nearly the end of the show.
No.
Yeah, sorry. I know.
Well, it really has gone quick this week. We've been talking a lot.
We say that every week, you know, but it does. Honestly, it goes real quick. But if you want to get hold of us, you can get hold of us on Instagram, Starlight Campbell. Twitter is at Susie and Simon. That's S-U-Z-Y. And, of course, on Facebook.
And the show's available on Mixcloud, Spotify, iTunes and iHeartRadio. So please tell your friends.
So we're going to play you out with a track called Stargazer.
Well... Rainbow. Mm. Now, after Richard Blackmore left Deep Purple, I thought, oh my God, this is terrible, terrible. It was awful. It was awful news, you know, and I couldn't believe it because they were one of my favourite bands. And then he piled in with Rainbow, and I saw him three times. And this one, I think, is with Ronnie James Dio singing.
Yep.
Engineered by Martin. Oh, no, produced by Martin Birch, actually.
Yeah.
Who actually was the engineer on the early Wishbone Ash albums.
Of course.
There we go.
We like to mention Wishbone Ash. We love Andy.
Yeah, we do. Great band, great band. Doing a big UK tour at the moment. And so, you know, when he came out, I remember seeing him with Ronnie James Dio, and that album, Rainbow Rising, was fantastic, you know. And then they did the Russ Ballard track, Since You've Been Gone, with Graham Bonnet, and oh dear. I remember when he came on stage, he had this electric blue jacket on, short hair and sunglasses. I thought, who is this guy? This is not a rock and roller. It's ridiculous. And Blackmore's there with all his long hair and his ridiculous hat and strat and all his marshals and stuff. And then he opened his mouth. I thought, holy moly, because when that Since You've Been Gone modulates into the higher key, you think nobody can reach that those notes, but he's fantastic. But anyway, this is Ronnie James Dio with Rainbow.
Indeed, and it's featuring the Munich Philharmonic Orchestra, would you believe?
No.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. And a Vaco Orchestron, and what Richie Blackmore called a string thing, all playing this half-Turkish scale.
Let's play it. See you next week.